Well, keep fingers, toes, and eyes crossed, because at the moment there seem to be no hurricanes on Florida's horizon, but that doesn't mean we don't have to be ready. And not just ready for hurricanes. The nearly nonstop rains of the past week have raised the specter of flash flooding for our area and have also saturated the ground to the point a fairly light breeze could start knocking over trees, and we don't even want to think about that right now, right? Well, this morning on WFSU's Perspectives, we're going to be talking readiness with the head of Leon County Emergency Management, the general manager of the City of Tallahassee's electric utility, and the city's expert on resilience. And of course, we'll take your phone calls and emails too. That's all coming up on WFSU's Perspectives right after the news from NPR and Gina Jordan. Well, happy Thursday and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for joining us via the radio waves, the telephone line, the email machine, the Twitter device, and all the other ways we have to communicate with one another nowadays. The phone number, 850-414-1234, as you are always welcome to be part of the conversation. If it's old-fashioned landline and long distance from you to us, 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. And here's your weather forecast. More bands of possibly heavy rain will be moving through North Florida and South Georgia the rest of today. Our flash flood watch remains in effect through this evening, and a chance we're going to see maybe a strange glowing orb in the sky for a few hours tomorrow and possibly into the weekend, and then a likelihood of more rain coming at us. We've kind of settled into that weird wet weather pattern right now. And that kind of precipitated, see, precipitation.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, linkage there. You like that? The idea to bring in some of our top emergency managers for both the City of Tallahassee and Leon County to get a handle of where we are in preparation for what is likely to be the heavier part of the hurricane season. Remember, it started in June 1, and now that we're into past August 1, that's when things kind of get a little bit more intense than what they do in the beginning. So would you please welcome to the radio waves here our good friend Kevin Peters. He is Leon County's Director of Emergency Management, and good to see you outside the Emergency Center, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thanks for having us back. It's good to be back in studio with you.
It is wonderful to have you here, too. Let's say hi, too, to Bob McGarrah, General Manager for the City of Tallahassee's Electric Utility, and not out hanging from a pole today, Bob. That's a good thing.
Yes, it is, and I appreciate being here with you today, Tom.
It's wonderful to have you here, Bob. Abina Ojatayo, Chief Resilience Officer for the City of Tallahassee, joins us here, and we're going to talk resilience,
too. I'm excited. Thank you for having us here, Tom.
Well, let's start off with a little bit of update here. Kevin, I remember the media event here back on June 1. It's the big rollout of the survival guide and all that kind of thing, and everyone urged to have a plan. And right now we kind of are not even to the midway point, just a few months into this thing, and no hurricanes, as we mentioned, but we have what could be construed as a pretty intense weather situation right now. What's going on as far as response of responders at this point?
With our current weather, we're just, like you said a little earlier, it's that wet, rainy summer pattern that we're settled into. Seen a lot of storms coming in off the Gulf of Mexico. It's pretty persistent rain, but we've been very lucky. We've had the breaks, like yesterday afternoon, for example. Mostly during the morning, we had some rain, and it slacked off and was pretty dry in the afternoon. It allows the stormwater systems to get caught back up. It looks like we've had, depending on where you're at in town, somewhere around the 3 to 5 inches of rain overall for the last couple of days. National Weather Service outlook is for another 2 to 4 possibly. I know that the county and the city, we have crews out monitoring, our public works crews watching our stormwater system, the electric crews responding as needed. One of the nice things is that we're not seeing the severe thunderstorms with this, not a lot of strong gusty winds, but we do have a few thunderstorms coming through. Obviously, lightning always a threat with the thunderstorms, but as we've accumulated the rainwater, some of these trees, they could have loose limbs now or weakened root systems, so a little bit of wind from our thunderstorms that pass through. Certainly could make our electric friends, our public work friends, a little busy. But all in all, seems to be, I think, you know, maybe electric will fill in the blanks here, but more of a routine weather event, routine type calls. We did deploy sandbags at the sites across the city and the county. The county report I have is about 300 were distributed yesterday. So not a tremendous demand, but the resource is there for the people that may need them as we get through the remainder of the week with whatever rain that's yet to come.
Yeah, and sandbags do not deteriorate. They can over extended periods of time, but they're always a good thing to have around because you can never tell where a flash flood event may occur. You may have some place that normally is dry that gets really wet really fast and you need to respond. So if you have a couple stockpiled, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt about that. Again, that goes into the preparedness of being ready, having your own supply of sandbags. You know, you can get them at local hardware stores, order online, get some and have them. So if you do need them, like you said, you can set them up, have them in place. And again, it's really not going to protect your home totally, but it's more to divert the water flow, keep it from getting in those vulnerable places around garage doors or exterior doors. Keep that water diverted, moving away from your home, and protect your property.
Okay. How are we doing with the electric system, Bob? I know we had some scattered outages here over the past couple of days with those tree limbs and stuff like that. How are we doing?
Well, as Kevin said, we've been fortunate not having a lot of heavy wind as these storms have come through. We have experienced some customer outages over the last couple of days. They've all been attributed to trees or tree limbs. And as we go forward, as Kevin said, with the saturated ground, if we get any winds, we're going to have some limbs that are saturated that may come down. Trees may get uprooted, especially if we have any winds going forward for the next few days. But our folks have been able to be handling the outages very well so far.
I saw something the other day that just fascinated me. The amount, especially on one of these large, like centennial oak trees, the amount of water loading that can be on the leaves of those things is just thousands of pounds of water in a tree. That's crazy.
It changes the dynamics of the trees between a dry time and a wet time that we're out trimming all the time on our system to trim the limbs back. And there's a pretty large difference between a dry tree and a wet tree. And we see as it gets waterlogged, enhanced opportunities, enhanced times that the limbs will get into the wires.
How do you guys get ready for essentially to be able to move on? If not a moment's notice, you got a couple days to prep the entire City of Tallahassee Electric Department and coordinate with Talquin and other utilities to get ready for a major storm event. Well, do you hit a button and it all magically takes place? What goes into that?
No, it's not magic, but it's a continuous planning process that we have. It starts with a basic storm plan that we have. What's fortunate for us, a regular storm like this keeps us prepared for bigger storms. And so as some of my guys say to me all the time, this is what we do for a living. So we spend the whole year in some sort of planning or prep mode. Now, is around the start of the calendar year, we're updating, coming out of the last season, we're updating our plans for any lessons learned from last year's storms. We're working with our peers in the state. We have several associations that we work together and do mutual aid planning for us either to go help them or them to come help us during the storm. So we have some meetings and discussions with our peers about refreshing the contact list and that process. And then starting to get our people prepared every spring, just like we ask our customers to have a personal storm plan, especially for a hurricane. That's something that's critical for my staff because I expect them to be at work during a storm where a lot of folks get to go home or leave town. My team goes the other way. They get to stay here, and we all have to make sure that our families and folks that that depend on us, that we have a storm plan. So we emphasize that and work with our employees in the spring. It's about the same time that the county and city is out working with our customers, say, and put together a storm plan. So it's that sort of evolution. And then every time we have a major event come by, we sit down and look at what happened and what did we learn from it and roll that back into the planning process.
Well, you just made a wonderful segue over to Abhinan, what she does here as far as resilience for the city of Tallahassee. And by extension, all of us, because you can provide a resource, a useful resource for any organization that still has to function, including family organizations. We, no matter what happens with those storms, we got to figure out what we're going to do and where we're going to go and all that. Yeah. So when it comes to the city, though, mm-hmm. I mean, what is your function? What do you help to coordinate when it comes to not just the electric department, but everybody?
Yeah. When we think about the word resilience and we hear it in different sectors and different disciplines, and really it's how do we bounce back from any number of adversities or shock to our system. And so for the city, we have so many systems that have to operate, and I think our residents have come to expect that. But we really view the city as a huge ecosystem with several subsystems. So families, family units, households, you know, it's sort of one system. You have businesses and that sector also as a ecosystem in and of itself, human service organizations. So for the city, when we think about resilience, we do a lot of work with emergency preparedness, of course, and continuous planning. But we kind of take several thousand feet out and look at how we function over many years. So what is on the horizon for the next decade or so? How do we build up our systems so that we are not always reactive, but really we've built in the adaptive capacity, whether it's on the infrastructure side or if it's just policies about how we do building codes, you know, how do we strengthen new buildings that are coming up so that they don't always need to be rescued? But also, how do we train our residents to be self-sufficient as well? Again, not just in responding to a disaster, but to remove any number of vulnerabilities that might be there on a normal day that get exacerbated during a major event. So it's pretty broad, but the beautiful thing is that where the magic happens, so to speak, is the integration, right? What's happening in one department that strengthens another department, or what's happening in the nonprofit sector that could strengthen families, but also maybe support some of the work that the city is doing. So I get the fun job of trying to mix that up, match it up, and connect folks so that we can get what is really a quadruple bottom line for every kind of investment that we make.
Because any organization that provides critical public services like city or county government or state government has to have plan B, C, D. If this shuts down, what do we do here? Where
exactly.
do we move the resources, all that? But you bring up some good points that we can talk about in just a moment on the other side of this break. I mean, when it comes to just our organizations, like you said, the private sector, too, or nonprofits, or even families, do we have our plans in place? And we'll talk about that coming up on the other side of this timeout here on WFSU's Perspectives. We're talking preparedness and where we sit here just a couple months into the 2018 Atlantic hurricane season and the fact you don't need a hurricane to have a disaster. That's all coming up in just a moment. Don't go away. We are back on Perspectives and glad you can be a part of it, too. And a reminder, you can always find the program online at WFSU.org. Just go to our new and improved website, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and then you will see Perspectives and 411 Teen and all those other programs come up there. And you can click Perspectives and hear our past shows. We archive them and try to have the latest program up and available for you within a few hours of when it actually airs. At least by this time tomorrow, it should be up there. there and running. Talking to Kevin Peters, the head of Leon County's Emergency Management Organization, is and along with Bob McGarra for the City of Tallahassee's Electric Utility, the general manager therein, and Abina Ojitayo, Chief Resilience Officer for the City of Tallahassee. Kevin, swinging into this part of the storm season, though, I would imagine, like Bob said, you start to get a little more sense of urgency when it comes to coordinating all the different functions that got to be ready to go.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and a bit of breaking news I think we might have here is Colorado State just released their update on the hurricane season forecast right as we were coming on the air this afternoon. For the remainder of the 2018 season, they're calling for 9 more named storms, 3 hurricanes, and 1 major hurricane. So, yeah, just to your point, we're heading to the peak of hurricane season. September's at high point. We still have the risk out there. And, you know, there's a lot of good work that goes on as we lead into June 1st. People want to get ready. We have a lot of those preparedness meetings and, you know, reviewed plans. But this is the time to really be on alert and be on the lookout. And, yeah, we can't let our guard down. September is the busiest month of hurricane season, and based on the forecast from Colorado State, we still have an expectation for more storms to form in the Atlantic. We've been lucky so far. 3 named storms. We're up through Chris. A couple of those have been Atlantic storms, nothing to worry about here in our area. But we did have a very early season wake-up. Actually, it was a preseason wake-up with Alberto. So there's no rest for the weary in hurricane season. It seems like you're always watching for a storm or getting ready for one.
And that always amazed me because people say, oh, okay, they revised the forecast. There's going to be fewer storms than originally anticipated. We're going to skate through this one. It just takes one.
That's right. The forecast, it's not zero. So that's the key takeaway. It's not zero. So there are numbers there, and a story that I, you know, I like to share that the forecast, it was a good forecast in the 1992 season. It was, I think, 7 named storms and 1 major hurricane, and the forecast verified they had Andrew, a major hurricane, and so it doesn't have to be an overly active season. You don't have to have a lot of numbers in the forecast. It just takes that one, and just don't let your guard down.
Yeah, you can't. Bob McGarra, I'm so glad you're here because you folks especially heard it like crazy every time that there's a storm, every time there's an outage. I think there's a lot of confusion, some may even say misperceptions when it comes to the restoral plan. And in fact, you guys in the electric department do have a plan. When something goes down, you have a way to work the grid so that it comes back in a logical way. It may not make any sense to most of the people who are without power, but it does. How does that work?
Well, talk with a major storm like a hurricane first, where you have a lot of damage. It is a logical plan. We start with where we make the power, and then the wires that move it from where we make it into the city. The substations that allow us to distribute it out into the city, and then the wires that go out to the customers. So we are essentially following that flow process. Doesn't make any sense to fix the wires to the houses if we can't get power to the substations. And then within that, there is a priority system. We have identified certain facilities working with Kevin and his team. We annually identify a priority list. Those are going to be facilities like hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, some critical community facilities like the public safety complex, the airport, the wastewater treatment plant. So we'll work that flow from power plant through transmission, substation, and distribution with those priorities in mind. And once we've got those priority customers back, it then becomes a numbers game for us. We look at where the largest concentration of outages are, because oftentimes it takes the same amount of resources to get 5 customers back on as it would take to get 500 back on. So if I can send a crew where there's a place to get 500 back on, that's going to come first. So once you get all the priority work done, you work down from the numbers. We'll just start with where the largest concentrations of outages are until we get down to everybody restored.
Oh, you're saying then that the folks with the greatest political clout don't have the top priority for power restoration?
Nope. We don't look at other than the priority list that we establish with the county, emergency management. Our folks that are making those decisions aren't looking at who the customers are. We're looking at just straight numbers.
Well, because I know you, that has always been a deal. And before we depart from that, the other thing, when you have a mutual aid agreement with another utility, now we are a non-commercial, a municipal utility here in the city. Those folks, they would be first call than other municipalities within Florida? Or how does that work when you send out the, hey, we need help?
We have actually for years had mutual aid agreements both within what we call the public power community, which are municipal utilities like ourselves, the cooperative community like Talquin, and with the investor owned, dating back into the 80s, late 80s. We've had mutual aid agreements with the investor owned. So when we see a storm coming in, we'll reach out across segment lines. There are some minor working differences between the municipals and the co-ops and the investor-owned. So we'll likely look at municipals first. But if we need the resources, we reach out. Hermine's a good example. We had 8 or 9 partners in during mutual aid. One of those was Gulf Power, which is an investor-owned utility. The rest of them were public power utilities. But I effectively have the ability to reach out to any public power utility in the United States. And the utility, the investor-owned utility in any cooperative in the United States and the investor-owns in the Southeast to bring resources in. Now, we got to keep in mind that what our folks do on an electric system, especially when part of it's energized and part of it's out of service, is dangerous. And you always have more people willing to come in than you can use. We have to look at how we bring mutual aid crews in and integrate them with our crews to do it in a safe manner. Because for both our employees, the mutual aid employees, and our customers, so that we don't have anyone get hurt.
And I will add that one of your crew, I will not mention any names here, but in the outflow from a storm a couple years ago said it was a little bit like 9/11. You had tens of thousands of people who wanted to help, who came flooding into Manhattan, and they kind of got in the way because they didn't know the subway system literally, and they did not have the preparation and the knowledge needed to really make a contribution. And you don't want to have that situation either, where your folks are pulled off of their restoration efforts to try to bring someone else up to speed who may be totally unfamiliar with what they're dealing with here in the city of Tallahassee.
Well, and that's a great analogy, and that's what happens. The only time I can think of where I've seen mutual aid, there not be more mutual aid than you needed, was when the state of Florida was hit last year with Irma. And every utility in the state of Florida had mutual aid needs. It was the largest in the electric sector. It was the largest mutual aid mobilization that I'm aware of in the 30 plus years I've been in the business. We started running out of resources there. But most every other time, it's just as you described, that there's more people available to come in and help, both from the utilities and from the contractor ranks, than we can safely use on our system.
I mean, now let's talk about resilience when it comes to, say, a small business or a nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. Beyond just the have a plan, all right, where if the storm comes, we're going to shut down and we'll all go home. But there are still some things that just about any organization can do to keep some minimal functions going, even in a pretty bad storm or disaster, right?
Absolutely. And we talk a lot about preparedness because it matters if you are able to respond immediately. And if you are put out of business for a long time, especially for our small business owners, that might mean the end of your business altogether if your recovery time is too long. And so, of course, thinking about response is important. In our government work, we talk a lot about what we call COOP plans. That's continuity of operations. And you have your backup plan, you know, your plan A, plan B, plan C. But what I like to, what I like community members and even families to really think about as they consider their units as a system, as an organization, is you have to build in these relationships and these partnerships long before a crisis hits, right? That is how you build up your resilience capacity, is you don't wait for an event to happen to now test your relationships, your resources. And so for nonprofits and for small businesses especially, we need to build these partnerships early on where we can depend on each other. And it's the same way that you think about neighborhoods. The city has done a lot of work through our neighborhood affairs to bring neighborhood associations together to give them the tools to strengthen their relationships and to have plans in place, not just for an incident, but really just how do you function well as an organization? How do you depend on each other? How do you know who has what kind of resources so when something happens, you can depend on each other? In the same way for businesses, nonprofits, and so forth, know what organizations have, know what facilities might be available for sharing, you know, during a crisis situation. Have these partnerships, so-called, or MOUs, if you need it, in place already. And we saw that, I think, with Hermine and certainly with Irma as well. You had small businesses like Domi Station and some of the other spaces stand up and say, hey, if somebody needs to come use printers or internet for the next week, our space is available. And that was an awesome show of community spirit and service. Those kind of things need to be happening on a regular basis. And so you're not waiting in an emergency situation. So have your COOP plans, your continuity of operations, have your plan A and plan Bs, but also invest in technologies and systems that make your organization function smoothly. One thing, for example, when we did the county hosted a small business preparedness workshop, and we talked a lot about the kind of strategic plans you might have in place, but even having a tool like a cloud-based data storage, right? And that's an investment you might make on a blue sky day where you're storing your critical data in the cloud. And I know that can be kind of scary for some of our small businesses and organizations. However, if you have a flood situation and you lose all those critical documents, if you're a case management nonprofit and all of your information is on paper, I mean, imagine the loss. It's not just how do you function after a storm. It's capturing decades of information that could really set you back. So that kind of investment on a blue sky day really comes in handy on a gray sky day.
And it can be as easy, like for a family, as saying, okay, if our house is unlivable. Mm-hmm. Where do we go?
Exactly. And I mean, when I'll just use myself as an example, I think our neighborhood is doing a really great job trying to build up those relationships. But I'll get right in the face of my neighbor. I would get to know them. We have the kind of relationship where we look out for each other. My children know the path directly to their door, you know, but having that extended network, whether that's in your faith communities, that's something that came through for me as well for Ermin. When we had a tree come down, it was our church community that mobilized to come in and cut down a tree, and it was safe to do so. We stayed at another family's house during Irma. So those kind of relationships matter, and I'm a big proponent of building those things up right now. The fancy word we use around the resilience sort of planning world is social cohesion, right? And it's a critical piece of how this community actually bounces back from any disaster. It's a fancy word, but really, I think the principle is what perhaps Mr. Rogers taught us, is how to be a good neighbor. Right. Get to know each other, build those relationships that come in handy and come in strong for you during times of crisis and shocks.
And Kevin Peters, that leads to another discussion, which is we saw this during Irma when the entire state seemed to be threatened by this monumental storm. And so many people took to the highways, and that may not have been the best place for them to be, because their plan B was get the heck out of Dodge and go three states away.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, the first step to that is going back and listening to the local officials. You know, there's some data that we've heard from the state of Florida that probably more people evacuated than were ordered to evacuate. You know, again, you always have to gauge your personal situation and what the community's capacity for response and recovery is. But there was probably a fair number of folks that might have done well if they had stayed at home following their local officials' directions. Generally, our evacuations are based on our storm surge impacts. So coastal area residents were the most vulnerable from the storm surge effects from Irma. Obviously, the Keys, you know, Monroe County, it's a countywide problem. But you get into southeast Florida or southwest Florida, you know, getting in tens of miles from the coast in many cases is a good option as opposed to going three states away. It all goes back to that, to the preparedness, you know, what you do in your home to fortify your home, the disaster supply kit you have. And like Abena was mentioning, some of the social networks you've established, you know. Knowing where you're going to go if you're going to leave and who you're going to stay with, so you're not scrambling throughout the state trying to find a shelter or a hotel room that may already be full.
Yeah. Now, one thing I noticed, Bob McGarrett, is that a lot more commercial businesses have kind of taken that tack of, okay, how independent from the grid can we be? I saw the latest round of Caterpillar generators that Publix is putting in at their facilities. I think a bunch of stores like CVS and some others are doing the same thing, so that once the all clear is given after a major windstorm event, they can be up and running pretty doggone fast.
Well, actually, that's part of their personal and corporate planning activities, where they've said their business is critical enough that they've got to have a backup, a plan B, if we can't serve them, if the facilities to them are down. We do the same thing in our business. We have backup generators at our critical facilities within the city so that if power is lost during the storm, those generators will come on during the storm and you may not lose power at all at your facility. And so we do have a number of businesses and individuals in the community that have made the decision that they want to have that reliability, that backup reliability during a storm event, and install generators. And I think that's a part of what every person in every business needs to evaluate is their continuity of operation plans. Is in the area of loss of electricity, doesn't happen that often. But in the event of it, do you need to have that critical backup?
And that can even extend to residential. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break that's coming down on us. And we are talking to Kevin Peters, Bob McGarra, and Abena Ojatayo here with the City of Tallahassee and also Leon County. And we'd love to hear from you at 850-414-1234. Or you can send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org, as we continue our discussion on preparedness for whatever may assail us, even if it's just a whole bunch of raindrops like we're getting right now. We'll be right back. We hope it doesn't happen, but if it does happen, and we do have another major windstorm occurrence here in North Florida and South Georgia, you want to be in a position to respond and survive and prosper and thrive and all of those other good things. So we can't say it too much. Have a plan, but not just plan B. How about C, D, E, F, and G? And Abena, if we can ask you, what resources do you make available through the City of Tallahassee to folks that just say, well, you know, I keep hearing this, mm-hmm. and there's a website that the state of Florida provides, which is a pretty good one. It really is. It has the checklist that you need to go through for your household or your business or anything else. But you've got some other things that you can bring to the table. factor.
Yeah,
right?
One of the things that the city tries to promote first, because we're all tech savvy now, if you are, we have an app called Digitally, and that really puts all of the city's resources at your fingertips. So if you download that app, you can do everything from report an outage at your location. You can see that somebody is paying attention to it, you know, that it's not, you're not in the dark. But you can also have that, again, outside of a storm season, any number of services that the city provides, really just a thumb or swipe away. Of course, we have our phone numbers that you can reach us at. But I also want people to pay attention to things that they do, not just in emergency situations, right? So as you probably heard already, we have a lot of that emergency response stuff down. And what you do ahead is going to be key so that we can meet you when we can in the order that makes the sense for our community. But there are some things that some people might not know about as far as their personal properties and how to shore that up, right? So with our community housing services department, there are resources available if you cannot afford to improve the structure, right, to build up and fix building code issues that might weaken your building in the case of an emergency. There are funds available for that. That is that you can apply for. I mentioned earlier neighborhood prep. We have a guide where you can start to build your neighborhood associations up. We have inventories where you can go door to door if you need to and ask, okay, who has what kind of tools that we can use during a certain situation? What are the phone numbers? And who are the critical and vulnerable people? So we can have them on a list, a special registry list. For example, a senior that might be stuck in their homes that might need to be the first person you call or check up on if something happens. All those things happen days, months in advance. And then, you know, as we talk about personal preparedness, the city is also thinking broadly about the entire system. We're doing a community resilience plan. And over the coming months, there's an opportunity for community members and nonprofits and organizations to give input into, again, that 10, 15, 30-year sight line, what we might do differently, right? How we might help each other out so that we can be stronger for any kind of shock, not just storms. Storms are kind of in our face right now, but there are a number of shocks that could disrupt what our city knows to be normal. But it's the same kind of capacities that will save us, right? Our adaptive capacity, our ability to be resourceful, our ability to connect with other departments. Those are the things that will help us come out alive.
Well, resourcefulness is a good thing, but sometimes overreaction can be a very, very bad mm-hmm. thing. And Kevin Peters, let's talk about that, because we got into it here a little bit during the break, that when Irma hit and a lot of people, perhaps too many people, hit the highway, their first reaction was to flee. That didn't necessarily make for a good response for a lot of folks, including them.
Yeah. There was the mad dash out of South Florida and looking for a place to stay in North Florida. But, you know, it's the return, coming back to your home, and the congestion of the roadways did interfere a little bit with the ability for the response effort to mobilize and get into impacted communities. Whether it was Rob's team's going down with electric to help out some of the southern cities, to fuel resupplies, to, you know, there's way more gas stations and fuel tankers that can serve them. So mm-hmm. being able to turn those trucks around quickly is the key to getting the fuel back. And with the traffic congestion, it slowed down those operations to refuel these communities. And again, just the road network, the evacuation process to get people out using the shoulder lane part of it that they implemented this year is good for outbound traffic. It's not really set up for bringing the masses back into a community. So just the hours of slow return, it did kind of create some bottlenecks where emergency response relief efforts were slowed down.
Sure, and it also contributes to that total fuel shortage, too. If everyone is on the highway and having to pump gas, mm-hmm. that's fewer gallons of gas that are left for more critical folks who need to escape the storm surge. Is that a good rule of thumb, though, if emergency officials don't tell you to evacuate, maybe if you shelter in place, that's the better choice?
Yeah, again, following the directions of your local emergency officials, they will give you the explicit evacuation areas that are under the greatest threat. Again, you have to assess your personal home's situation. Every home is different, and obviously newer construction built to the more modern building code, typically better. older type construction, maybe older mobile homes, older manufactured homes. You'll want, if you weren't part of the ordered evacuation, definitely want to consider it. But you're right on. Follow the directions. And typically with hurricanes, we're talking about our coastal storm surge zones that are the most vulnerable during hurricanes.
Okay, Bob McGarry, one thing that just amazed me, and you saw this during Alberto too, even though it was a, what's the term now? Nothing burger, I think. But when people just went flying into the grocery stores and they loaded up on bottled water. And I'm thinking to myself, I cannot remember the last time that the city of Tallahassee's drinking water pumping stations went down. We always have water. Everything else can be blown away, but we always seem to have water. So is that really necessary? We need to lay in stocks of gallons of bottled water?
Well, we're fortunate that we have a very reliable and robust water system in the city. And you're correct that there's very few times that there's an interruption of water. But you could do some simple things in your house to stockpile water without without having to go buy bottled water. Most all of us have bathtubs in our house, and we have pots and pans. There's no reason why you can't fill your sinks up, your bathtubs up, your pots and pans, bottles, whatever you've got at the house, to amass that water and not necessarily have to go through the expense of buying bottled water. Because in most all of the cases, the water system is going to be there.
Mm-hmm. I understand a lot of folks have their own wells, and if that power goes out, yes, there's going to be
a
problem.
That's a different situation.
Yeah, I'm not yelling at them, but I know a lot of city water folks that just went out and they cleaned out Publix, you know.
And it's very expensive. I mean, bottled water in a lot of ways is more expensive than fuel. You think about the per gallon price, you know, for it, and then all the plastic waste that comes with it. That is one thing. If I had a pet peeve about a emergency and pandemonia, is we really don't stop to think just reasonable measures that we can take already without spending a lot of money and creating a lot of scare.
Yeah. Save your old milk jugs, folks. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but the silver lining with that is, though, our community was much better prepared for Irma on a personal level. We saw our citizens that went through Hermine, which many of them, it was the first hurricane they had ever experienced. They really took to heart the message that the city and county puts out to be prepared. And we saw what you're describing is what we saw in Irma, where our community prepared itself for Irma much better than we did individually for Hermine. So I think that's the silver lining behind that. Maybe didn't need to go buy all the bottled water the way it was done, but they were at least thinking ahead and planning ahead and putting a plan in place to be ready if the worst happened.
That's right, because I remember, Kevin Peters, you were saying coming off of that long doldrum that we had since we'd gotten hit by the last storm, that, you know, people were too complacent, they weren't taking this stuff seriously, and now every time the wind blows, it's like, well, we got to get ready.
Yeah. He's finding that happy medium between, I said the pandemonium, the advance of storms, and the complacency, and that's a challenge of every emergency manager nationwide, whatever their hazard du jour may be. You know, my colleagues, I'm sure, in California, with the raging fires now, trying to, you know, encourage all that pre-wildfire preparedness. They're probably experiencing some of the same things, and as they move through the next couple of years, I'm sure those Californians are going to be very hypersensitive to any hint of smoke in the air. Mm-hmm. But that's our challenge every year, is to make sure that people, the lessons learned of the past stay fresh and they don't lose it, and preparing is right where it needs to be, that people are not overreacting, they're not underreacting, they've considered their risk, they've looked at their home, they've done some of the things we've talked about here, and they can take the disasters in stride. I think that's the goal we really want, is to be able to not let it be the massive upset that feels like it is, that it's, you know, it's Florida. We've been hit. We're the most hurricane-prone state in the coastal part of the United States, and it's part of Florida life. And reacting and responding to disaster should be part of Florida life.
And recognizing that it is not just hurricanes that can be the disaster.
Right.
I mean,
right.
you mentioned that. Even though we're losing out on our train traffic here, CSX has us up for sale, but still you get a freight that comes through with a hazardous cargo on it. Mm-hmm. The thing spontaneously erupts into flames, and we have to evacuate half of downtown Tallahassee. You know, we got to be ready for that, too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of the unfortunate things. The armed incidents that are happening throughout the nation, being keen to the signs of people who may be experiencing the personal distress in their life, that's critical. But, you know, those are the types of incidents that they happen in a flash. They happen very quick and they change a lot of lives quickly. We've talked a lot about the kits and supplies and home, but, that first aid piece of things in this world, that's another thing that I think our citizens, if you've not had a first aid training recently, that's very, very key as we're moving forward, because it will help in the big disasters. It helps in some of these more tragic events, and it can help any day with a family member who may experience some type of just personal injury.
Yeah, good shout out to our friends at the Red Cross, who are always a really super partner when it comes to trying to get lives back on track there. But anyway, Bob, you and your crews all ready to go, huh?
Yes, sir. We're ready.
All righty. Well, let's just hope we don't have to avail ourselves of a whole bunch of those bucket trucks out there. But it's also good to know that the people are there. And speaking as someone who used to be affiliated with a telecommunications company, you're absolutely right. The amount of resources that are out there in the field to help out if everything does head south is just remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, is there going to be any other upcoming seminars or public events that you're going to have to help folks if they want to get a little bit more prepared than otherwise they may be?
Sure. We have, if any neighborhood especially wants to get their own neighbors together, they can reach out to our Neighborhood Affairs Division and ask, and they have liaisons that are ready and available to come meet with them and do some trainings there. I'm sure we'll do some more collaborative programming between the county and with nonprofits as well to shore them up. I want to shout out another resource that unfortunately not enough people know about is 211 Big Bend. So folks everybody knows 911, and you ought to know that number. But another number that you should know to call is 211, and that is a non-emergency human services support line. Everything from suicide prevention to also just emergencies that are happening for your family. So if you're about to lose your home, or if you've experienced some kind of personal disaster and you need some help, 211 Big Bend will connect you with almost every existing nonprofit human service organization in the entire Big Bend area. And they're a huge partner in emergency situations, but certainly, again, non-emergencies, blue sky days, call them up and they know who to connect with.
Hi, and I can see Randy Nicholas just smiling here along with his entire team. Let's see, guys, do we have anyone online there? I saw a name flash up on our thing. Oh, yeah, let's go to Brian here on, let's see. Brian wants natural gas to, I'm reading this as it comes across here. I see Lydell typing like a madman back there. Wants natural gas to be mentioned. And so your city electric there, Bob, but for natural gas customers here, any good things for them you can pass along?
Well, our natural gas system is robust like the water system, and because of its design, there are typically not many, if any, interruptions on natural gas systems, on the distribution systems during a hurricane or a major storm event. So that's the good news. If you've got gas cooking, gas heating, gas water heating, your high likelihood that it's going to be there for you during the storm.
Okay. And as long as we're in your neck of the woods, something else that just popped into mind because it comes up every, hey, if we'd underground all these lines, we'd never have any problems again and I'd never lose electricity. It'd be wonderful. Your response would be?
I would love to have the entire system undergrounded. And most all of the new installations we've done for 20 plus years are underground now. It's a cost and impact issue. It's very costly to take the wires that are above ground and put them underground. And when I say costly, in the neighborhood of $1.5 million a mile at times. And there's also tree and community impacts with going underground. And we do look at opportunities to put it underground. While it might reduce the outages from things like trees and animals, there are some downsides to underground. When you do have an outage, it takes much longer to fix than an overhead facility. But that is the direction we'd love to move to. And as we have opportunities to convert some of our overhead to underground, we do that. And like I say, most all of the construction we do today, new construction in new neighborhoods, is underground.
Okay, terrific. Thank you for addressing that, because it comes up all the time. Just a few moments to go. Kevin Peters, any final thoughts, sir?
Well, we've talked a lot about some of the ways to be involved, and I just wanted to remind folks that if they're interested in some type of volunteerism, helping out during disasters, but they're not sure how to connect, they should reach out to the county's Volunteer Services Division, Volunteer Leon, and their number is 606-1970, 606-1970, and the county, we can help them get connected with other organizations and agencies that can help during disasters.
Okay. Bob McGarry, anything that you want to bring up before we say bye-bye?
Just two things. We've said it throughout the whole show: be prepared, and second, know that we're prepared and we'll be there as quick as we can when there's an outage.
Very good. Have an Ojitayo.
Be a good neighbor. Go out there and know what resources are on a blue sky day. Don't wait for a gray sky to act.
And we're just waiting for the blue sky to come back.
You might be waiting for a while.
We may be waiting. Thank you, folks, for coming and giving us an update on how we're doing for the city of Tallahassee and Leon County when it comes to disaster preparedness, be it a hurricane or something else. And it's good to know you guys are there. And as citizens of this area, we got to do our part, too. And thank you for reminding us that that is a critical part of disaster preparedness as well. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. Technical assistance provided by Evan Rossi this morning. Lydell Rawls on our interconnects, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for joining us today. We will talk again next week right here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.